So, JD, I wanted to start off today and ask about some of the flaws that people make in a lot of companies. There's a list of like five fatal flaws that most companies are dealing with these days. What are they, and how can they overcome those?
Well, there are a number of things that most companies overlook, and I have spoken to, I don't know, at this point, probably 30,000 CEOs in roundtables, and I'll ask every single one of those groups these questions. What is your number one competitive advantage? And barely 1-2% can accurately answer that question. When I say accurately, in a way that makes gives a message. So one of the most common flaws is they don't have a competitive advantage, but they think they do. They think that they can say, we've been in business since 1957, three generations, and they think that's a competitive advantage, relaying stability. It isn't a buying criteria in today's world, so that can really be misleading for companies. So they don't have a competitive advantage, or some have a competitive advantage, but they don't know what it is. So those people will likely, if they don't know what it is, they're going to paint themselves into a commodity corner, because what do? If they can't, in a sales encounter, differentiate themselves, they lower the price. They chip away at their margins because they think that's the only way to keep market share or gain market share. That is a fatal flaw. That is a spiral down and out.
So pricing yourself too low is a fatal flaw?
Yes, absolutely. If you have a clearly articulated value proposition, you don't need to do that. Think about this. I've seen clients do this all the time. There's a downturn in the market or in the environment, so they start lowering their prices until their margins are razor thin. And they do it to hang on to market share. But what they're doing is they're chasing price back and forth, ping-ponging back and forth between them and their competitors until they're putting each other out of business. People don't want to necessarily pay a lower price. They really want value. But most businesses do not know how to communicate value, nor do they know what value means to their customer. They're often guessing.
Well, let me ask this. How do you obtain value without putting a price to it?
So the equation is value is the benefit I will receive times how relevant it is. So if I want on-time delivery, and it's the number one most important thing to me, that less price equals value. On the other hand, if the benefit you think is that we're a family business for three generations, if you think that's a benefit to me, but it's very low in my relevance equation, then that minus price doesn't give me value. And so price has everything to do with the relevance of the value you're selling. Value meaning the attribute. Do I want on-time delivery? Do I want no returns? Do I want accuracy in the order? What is it I'm looking for that's going to make a difference that I'm willing to pay more for?
Jenny Smith, my guest this morning, talking about creating that competitive advantage. You mentioned the whole generational business. My business has been around for three or four generations. Are we losing sight of the fact that people are caring about that? I mean, because being in a small community like La Crosse, when somebody says that they've been around for 75 years, that means more to some people than, you know, hey, we've got great prices, good value, good everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you just gave me the classic pushback I get from people in communities like La Crosse, meaning we're a small community. We all know each other. We've known each other for generations. I hear that often. And so what I say to people like you who have businesses in those environments is make sure that it is, in fact, a buying criteria. So do I come to you because of the quality of what you deliver? Is that my first choice, or is my first choice that you've been in the community for three generations? So as competition goes online and brick and mortar is going out of business and people have more choices now than ever, does it matter that you're third generation, or does it matter that I get exactly what I want from you? And so I believe there is a shift. You know, this new phrase today is disruptive. You know, all the technology is disrupting industries. Choices is disrupting industries. We can't be touting the things that used to work for us today. Having said that, some people will be completely convinced, and I can't tell you you're wrong. In your community, it may be highly valued. But all I say is make sure it's highly valued before you lead with it in your marketing and sales message.
That's interesting. I mean, that's an interesting thought right there, because I think that old school, people probably, yep, that's what they think. But I read a report this morning, Janie, that had Walmart running scared of Amazon now because they're offering a discount of their low prices if you order it online and then go pick it up at the store, to kind of combat even the newer school than the big box store.
It is. Those two are duking it out, and it's going to be bloody. And I'm afraid it's going to be bloody for Walmart, because Amazon's got the infrastructure Walmart doesn't. I've even heard that Amazon in places like New York City are now promising two-hour delivery. I mean, it's frightful. The world is changing at such a pace. We cannot use old-school marketing. We cannot sell with marketing fluff. The phrases that we used to use, good customer service, good people. Go pick any industry. Pick one of your customers, clients. Pick a look at their website, and then look at four or five of their competitors. We see this all the time. They use the same language. Our mission is to make sure the customer, you know, we exceed expectations. our people are knowledgeable and well-trained and courteous. So what?
That's everybody's website. Honestly,
right,
Janie, you hit the nail on the head.
They all say the same thing. It doesn't differentiate. And if you cannot differentiate, you are a commodity. If you are a commodity, it is about price. You simply have to get away from that price differentiator to survive and thrive, because it's not going to happen. You've got to know, one, what does the customer want most from my business, and do I deliver it? And then the third piece, which I've been talking about lately, is do I measure it? If they want on-time delivery, do I measure it? If they want accuracy, do I measure it? If I'm not going to go out there and say, well, we have good quality, I'm going to say we have less than 0.5% returns last month and for last year, and in fact it's less than 0.46% for the past 4 years. That's what the customer needs to build confidence and reduce risk. And if you build confidence in the buying equation, people will pay more for it. Every one of us will.
So how do we commoditize? That's not a word.
Commoditize ourselves?
How do we not make our what we're doing a commodity, and how do we make it more of a want or a need for our clients?
Well, the first thing we do is we find out, what do they value? Let's not assume that they value our stability, our family business. Let's not assume they value how personable our staff is. Let's find out what they really value. And, you know, as I've mentioned to you before, Bob, we do this with double-blind research, and my second book, Relevant Selling, tells you how to do it both with commissioning out research and or doing it yourself, but there's a number of ways you can do it online with surveys. But you've got to find out from the customer. Do not project onto the customer what you think they should value. When you know the three or four things most important to them in a transaction, you measure it and you deliver it and you talk about it nine ways to Sunday. You shout it from the rooftops. And when possible, you compare yourself to industry average. We have a higher safety rating than any other trucking company in our industry in this vertical, for example. So those are the kinds of things you really want to get out there. People will pay for value. Every one of us will pay for value when we see it. Very few companies know how to communicate value, hence they end up as a commodity.
Well, Janie, do customers really know what they want? Because I would think that a lot of them maybe think they know what they want, but when they're presented something in another way.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So when we do surveys, for example, we give them a list of things we know they want, so they don't have to come up with it. We'll say, on a 1 to 10 scale, how important are the following attributes in your buying decision? On a 1 to 10 scale, how important is it that they have a high referral rate? How important is it that they're on time? How important is it their employees are well-trained? These are dumbed-down attributes, and so then if it is well-trained, then we're going to dig deep and say, well, okay, we invest $200,000 each year, each quarter, on training our employees. Our employees have a minimum of 25 extra hours of product training. We want to be very specific about what our investment does to the thing most valued by the customer.
So what have you found then in your double-blind studies on the average for the average industry, what is it that most of the customers that you see across the, you know, across the board, what do most customers want?
Well, it's different for every industry, but we do see on time coming up quite a lot, on-time delivery, particularly in manufacturing and distribution. For service businesses, it's things like responsiveness. You know, how quickly does somebody return my call? How quickly does someone solve my problem? In a service business, if it's, let's say it's a machine, is it first time fix? First time you call me, I fix it. You don't have to wait for parts. Mm-hmm. Is it we stock inventory for parts so we know we can fix it first time? So we see a lot of things, but you know what world we're living in now? Fast. On time, fix it now. Get return my call now. If I had to distill it to something most common across the board in the surveys we see, those are the most common because we live in a world spinning out of control and so fast.
How do we slow that down? That's the question. You know, to me it sounds like the overwhelming thing that people want is convenience. Because if you mention on time, if you mention responsive, you mentioned, you know, things like that, to me it sounds like I want it and I want it now.
Yes, we're all into instant gratification. I don't know if I told you this in the last interview, Bob. Did I tell you my example about the gasoline station going in Disney?
I don't remember.
This is a great example for your listeners, I mean, to demonstrate what you just said about people want convenience. So if you rent a car and you're in Florida at Disney, and you're returning the car to Hertz, or your favorite rental car company. Mm-hmm. As you're driving in, you see a gas station on the right. You need to fill up the tank. And the gas station on the right is $5.85 a gallon. Directly across the street, it's let's say it's $3.25.
Uh-huh.
So what are you going to do? Turns out there's a median in the middle that goes for about 2.5 miles. You can't get to the one across the street without going all the way down and around and filling up and then going all the way down and around. So you have a choice. You can pay $5.85 and have the convenience, or you can turn the car into the rental car company and let them charge you $12.95. What are you likely to do?
Well, personally, I'd drive the extra 5 miles and save the $2 a gallon because I'm cheap. But I'm guessing most people would pay the $5.24 or $5.89.
Yeah. Most people will pay for the convenience and the time. And you know, when I ask audiences, you know, you are the exception. Most people are running to catch a flight. And you'd have to have left yourself ample time to have done that.
Uh-huh.
And so most people will pay for time and convenience.
So, most people do the $12 or most people do the $5?
The $5.
Okay, all right.
It's right there.
Okay. Yeah, see, I would probably do that too. It depends on the time. But then I'd be complaining about it the whole time, thinking, those SOBs charge me an extra $2.50 a gallon.
Yeah, but again, my only point is gasoline is the number one commodity we all buy every week.
Yeah, that's
true.
It's
a commodity. But do we sometimes pay more? I do. I'll go to the gas station on the right side of the street rather than going down and around if I'm in a hurry. Most of us will on most occasions.
But I think a lot of people don't even, like, I have a younger brother that doesn't even look at the price. He'll just go in and if he's there, he'll just buy it. And that's just the way he works. The way I'm wired is I got four kids. I look, there's a cheaper station over there.
There are both, but I just use that as a way to demonstrate how we will often pay more for a commodity. And not everybody. Of course, it's the bell curve. The preponderance of people at the top of the bell curve will probably pay the $5.85 instead of the $11.95 and probably not take the journey down and around.
Yeah, you're probably right, and I probably would do that too. Even though I say I would do this, I probably would just go for the Janie Smith, my guess. I guess I have a final question because you know I work in a marketing and advertising business, being on the air. What should somebody do, or what should somebody include in their marketing and advertising these days?
Yeah, so this is interesting. This is hard for a lot of people to get. They need to include quantitative data that proves their point in business. Unlike a mutual fund, past performance is the best indicator of future performance. So you want to use a number. Don't use marketing and advertising fluff words, you know, good quality, wonderful people. You want to say 99% on-time delivery, 98.6% quality control, whatever it is you're selling. What are the metrics you can use that demonstrate for the past 3 years we had less than 0.5% return? That builds confidence, reduced risk, and you'll see now more and more advertising and marketing are including those kind of numbers to get people a sense of what they mean by the adjectives that they've been using in the past.
Interesting stuff, that's for sure. Janie Smith, my guest, Relevant Selling and Creative Competitive Advantage. How do we find either or both of these books, Janie?
Amazon has Creating Competitive Advantage, and again, Janie Smith, easy name to remember, is the author, and Relevant Selling. Both of them can be purchased at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. Also, I think our website, if they'd like, they can read the first chapter on our website for free of both books. It'll really lay out what we're talking about for them.
And that's smartadvantage.com?
That's correct. Thank you.
Very good. Janie Smith, thanks a lot for joining us this morning.